like plants.
Gladiolas.
Better than people plants.
And magnolias.
They never do evil plants.
And begonias.
All they ever want is to grow. Smarter than us.
Violets.
They make a living without any fuss.
Us.
Water, sun, and air.
And
are all they need to grow. Do I have to get specific? I think plants
we are so terrific.
Plants are generous souls.
Ooh.
They feed all the air.
It's Garden Talk, hour number two at KSRO, celebrating 30 years, bringing you the best back in the swinging 80s, 1987, and here we are today, Gwen Kilcher and myself, and special guest Kate Fry is sitting in with us, and Kate is on the, she's on the warpath to popularize a underappreciated bulb. Tell us about this bulb, Kate.
Well, I don't know if any of you are fans of, or the bluebell woods in England. Just have been a couple times, but I just love to look at pictures of them. And I just wanted to say that you can have bluebell woods in your own home by using Spanish hyacinths. They're a bulb that you plant in the fall, and they're really underutilized. I think they must have been very popular years ago because I see them around really old gardens from the turn of 1890s and so, and they persist for years. They have the beautiful spikes of deep blue flowers. I think there is also a white selection that you could plant, but the foliage is absolutely beautiful. It's very, very graceful. And they bloom later than the grape hyacinths, which are most people are familiar with. They're really small. So they're like a sort of a giant version of the grape hyacinths, but the foliage is really something in itself. And they bloom for a long time, and they don't need water. They grow in shade beautifully under trees, and so they're just a no work absolute beauty that you could use to broaden your bulb variety and create your own bluebell woods.
Most local nurseries don't carry that, but you'd have to order it online.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Yeah. Kate, tell us where we can get these before people call in and you say, where do we get them?
Well, you probably have to wait now to get them from bulb catalogs.
Okay.
But they're readily available. And they're not expensive, so you could stock up. And I think a lot of the bulb companies start at least taking orders in July for fall bulbs.
Nice, and they do well, and they will spread.
They do well. They do multiply, but but they don't sort of take over type of thing. But they look very natural in our early spring landscape.
Well, very good proselytizing for that.
Yeah.
636-1350. You can reach Kate and Gwen right now by calling. We have open lines, or you can shoot me an email, Steve at KSRO from Petaluma. Joanne, good morning. Welcome to the show. What can we do for you?
Good morning, Steve and Gwen and guests. I have some questions about transplanting cuttings of echium. We have a giant echium bush right in the middle of the yard that we want to move and transplant because it's good for the bees.
So
I'm not sure how to do that.
Which echium is this? Is it the Pride of Madeira or that, what's the other one, the big torch-looking one?
Wild Pretty Eye?
That's a good, it's huge, and it has purple spike flowers.
I think it's the cantacans, if it's a shrubby one.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very much
now,
so.
Now, sometimes there'll be seedlings around the main plant. Do you have any seedlings?
Yes.
Yeah. So that ichium is not long lived. I think it lives about four or 5 years if you're lucky.
Mm-hmm.
But almost always there'll be seedlings around it. So I would suspect that if it's a big plant, that it wouldn't transplant well or be worth the trouble of transplanting. And I would dig up some of the seedlings and try to get as much of a root ball as you can, like dig it up with a shovel, dig them up with a shovel, not a trowel, and just move them into all the places that you want to have them.
Okay. Okay, so is it not possible to take cuttings as well?
Well, I'm not sure you could probably take cuttings, but I suspect that that it'd be much easier just to dig up some of the seedlings that you have. Because cuttings have to be coddled in a really specific environment, which you could do. I'm not sure how easily that particular plant roots. But I know that they grow really quickly from seedlings, so I think that'd be the easiest thing for you to do.
Okay, thanks. And one other question quickly. We have some Russian Perovskia, or Russian sage, I guess, and I just love it, but it's not thriving where we have it. And whereas the lavender we planted next to it is growing great. Can you suggest maybe a different conditions? Maybe it's getting too much sun?
It prefers full sun
all
day long, but not a lot of water. And it needs a better draining soil than a heavy clay soil where when you do water, it stays, soggy wet for a long period of time. So just because you have lavender in one spot, soil is different all over in the yard. So your soil could be a little bit different in the spot that you have the Russian sage compared to where the lavender is. So, and also, how long has that plant been in the ground?
It
still has some time to go before it's easily, you can easily pull it out. You could just go ahead and do some snipping and cut it all the way back to the main part of the plant. But that's if you have nothing else to do, because eventually, how have they been getting watered during the summer?
We just hand water.
Okay. Do you have a heavy clay type soil?
No, actually, no. It's pretty good soil. It drains pretty well.
And so did you add anything to the soil when you planted them?
No.
No? Let's see. 1 gallon. Kate, do you have any info?
Well, I think, it could be a few things. And they may not have gotten enough water when during the course of the growing season after they were planted, because they are really drought resistant. But I think if they were planted in the summer when it was already warm and the soil was dry, that could have set them back. And sometimes plant plants too high, so sometimes the root ball is exposed to the sun. And somebody just recently said, "Why my azaleas died? I so carefully selected them, and then and I don't know why they just are almost dead. And then they were planted like 3 or 4 inches out of the soil, so that was really an easy fix. And so that could be." And also, the Russian sage likes to be cut back in the winter. It does best when you cut it back, and it doesn't. Okay. It seems to need this renewal. So I would kind of look at to see if any of the roots are exposed, and I would cut it back. And well, we're supposed to have a lot of rain on Monday, I believe. So it should be really nice and wet. You can put some compost around it, but really, truly, the biggest Russian sages I've seen have been in the Sierras on kind of sandy soil or granitic soils. They're usually super tough.
Okay, maybe I just didn't get them established well. It was very hot when we planted them.
And I have another question for you. When you pulled it out of the pot, was it root bound in there, or was there a lot of? Did you see more soil than roots, or did you see all those white fibrous roots and a little soil?
As I recall, it was a little bit root bound.
Okay. And did you loosen up the root ball in any way before you planted it?
Yeah. Yes,
okay.
I did.
Okay. So, it just goes back to like what Kate says, watering. Did you water the plant? Was the root ball wet before you planted it, or was it dry before you planted it?
I think it was dry, and then we watered them in.
So what could happen is that when you plant a plant that has a dry root ball, dry soil, and then you go and water it, especially by hand, a lot of times the water just goes around the root ball because the dry soil starts repelling water, unless you had a drip system on it where it was slowly dripping water into that dry soil and it has time to soak it up instead of the water, you know, too much water coming out like from your hose and then it just running off the root ball. So there you go.
So you have a lot to ponder, Joanne.
Okay, thank you so much.
Okay, you're welcome.
You're welcome. Let's grab one more call before we take a break. Mary, welcome to Garden Talk live at KSRO. What can we do for you? Hi, Mary.
Oh, hi. Good morning.
Morning.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question. I have a hedge. I'm not sure if it's cedar or juniper. I got it when it was really small, and now it's really big, and I wanted to trim it. And I didn't know if there was a particular time of year that it's better to trim this type of bush. When we do trim it, the inside is really brown and dry looking, and then after a while it gets green.
Oh, that's interesting how it gets green after a while. How old are these plants?
Probably 35 years old.
Wow.
You know, I have it as a hedge between my house and my neighbor.
Well, at this point... Yeah, I would go ahead and you can cut it back at any time, but I would be careful going into really old branches and anything that's wider than your pinky, because the older the plants get, the less likely they are to be rejuvenating and to regenerate some new growth. And so you could just be killing the plant slowly but surely, and you'll have all the dead stems and, you know, branches and everything exposed and then never greens up again. And then you're looking at these bare patches. So prune back and stay into the greenery. Okay. And just prune back as far as you can go without going into bare wood. And hopefully that's going to be enough, but you know, it'll probably rejuvenate again and grow and you'll have to do some more pruning. But, that's what happens also when you keep hedging a plant. The inside part of the plant doesn't get any sunlight. And so the leaves, the needles in there have no purpose. So they just die off. And so, and then you say, okay, well, my plant has gotten too big. And now you need to really cut it back. But it's a plant that wants to be 10 feet high. And you're saying, no, I need you to be 5 feet now. And that you can't do that. So, you know. Planting the right plant, you know, size plant in the right area, this and that is important, but you have what you have. So just do some selective pruning and don't go too far back.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. I have one other question.
Sure.
I spoke to you years ago about this. My husband had planted a seed of a mandarin and it's grown now into this huge tree, but it's never bore any fruit. So we wanted to, graft a lemon onto that. Is there a time of year when you should do grafting?
Yeah, that's a really good question for the rare fruit growers. grafting citrus is very, 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 very difficult, according to Keith Borglum and David Ulmer, who are the expert, and Rachel Spaeth. Very, very difficult. If you want to get on their website, Rare Fruit Tree, Rare Fruit Growers, and get into the Redwood Empire chapter, you could probably ask them a question. I don't remember when the best time is to take to do the grafting, but they could give you some guidelines as to, you know, what part of the tree to graft and how to do it and this and that. And so
great. Okay. Well, thanks so much for the information. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Good talking with you, Mary. We'll be right back with Kate Fry and Gwen Kilcher. Lots of topics to talk about today. You can join our conversation anytime by simply calling us 636-1350 or steve@ksro.com. We'll certainly touch on fire-resistant plants, a lot of contradictory information about natives that are on lists and that shouldn't be on lists, and what Kate's experienced in her consultations, as well as Gwen, with people that have suffered extensive landscape damage and what their plans are for rebuilding and repopulating their landscaping, how to tell when a tree is on its way out. Gee whiz, that could take hours on the air too. But if you have questions and you're in that phase of looking at your landscaping, call us 636-1350. And we'll also run over what classes you can look forward to in Kate's school, the American Garden School. Her It's a kind of a rotating venue. There's not one place where you teach all the classes. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, we have classes at different locations, so for people's convenience. And so we've had classes at the Shed in Healdsburg. We have a number of classes at Cornerstone Sonoma and also at the Marin Art and Garden Center.
Okay, 636-1350 to reach Kate and Gwen or Steve at ksro.com.
North Bay play-by-play home of the Golden State Warriors and Oakland Raiders. FM News Talk Radio, 103.5, 94.5, KSRO.
No one likes to live with the mess and inconvenience of home improvement projects. That's why Milgard makes it so easy for you to replace your old, drafty, hard-to-open windows. Often it takes less than a day to improve the look and value of your home with reliable, energy-efficient Milgard replacement windows. Milgard's dependable delivery means you get the right windows at the right time. And because most jobs use your existing frames and openings, it minimizes the mess. Plus, you don't have to worry about disposing of your old windows. Milgard makes it easy to get home improvement done. Call DJ's Sash and Glass today for Milgard Windows. DJ's can furnish and install a variety of shower door enclosures too. Add a touch of class to your glass with DJ's Sash and Glass. 2985 Wilton Court. Call 546-7344 and online at djsglass.com.
Experience an intimate evening at the Center for Spiritual Living in Santa Rosa with Don Miguel Ruiz Jr., son of Toltec master and author Don Miguel Ruiz. For more than 2,000 years, the wisdom of the ancient Mexican Toltecs has been passed down from master to apprentice. Toltec master Don Miguel Ruiz passed his teaching to his son, and together they have captured the hearts of millions all over the world. It is a teaching of common sense and insight, leading to a life of happiness and fulfillment. On Saturday, March 24th, 7 p.m., Don Miguel Ruiz Jr. will share his family's Toltec tradition that gave shape to his father's books, The Master of Love and Little Book of Wisdom, The Essential Teachings, and show us how to heal from our emotional wounds, thus restoring the spirit of playfulness. For more information and tickets to An Intimate Evening with Don Miguel Ruiz Jr., March 24th at the Center for Spiritual Living in Santa Rosa, go online to steppingstonesbooksandgifts.org.
For over 80 years, George Peterson Insurance has been protecting Northern California, helping businesses and individuals get the right coverage for their needs. George Peterson Insurance continues to grow their employer resources and services in the North Bay. So if you or your company needs personal insurance, business insurance, or help with employee benefits, George Peterson Insurance is committed to this promise. We've got your back. George Peterson Insurance Agency at GPINS.com. License number 060.
What are you doing to relax tonight? Watching some TV? Helping the kids with their homework? A little work around the house maybe? You know, there's a better way to unwind. Why not take a vacation every day right at home in a luxurious Sundance Spa from Spa Land in Cotati? Immerse yourself into a space where worries will drift away. Meet the owners at Spa Land in Cotati and say goodbye to your aches, pains, and stress. Bring one home for your next everyday vacation. Visit them in Cotati at Across from Lowe's since 1983, spotland.com.
KSRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it.
So during our little discussion during the commercial break, Gwen and Kate were talking about hoop tunnels and Gwen's remake that's constantly having to be uncovered and then covered. And Kate, you had a little solution, something you stumbled upon that Gwen thought was a swell idea. Share it with us.
Yeah, well, this is really applicable for our vegetable gardens. And so, of course, we have a couple things that there can be issues in our vegetable gardens, and one is birds eating the seedlings, or And also frost on our freezing. And so I cover my every bed in our vegetable garden with Remade, that spun polyester, lightweight, breathable cloth. And a lot of people cover their lemon trees, citrus trees with this in the winter also. So this is protecting the plants from frost. It really creates a little mini greenhouse. And the best way to use it is to put hoops over your bed. And people make them from PVC pipe or cold rolled steel that's easily bendable or heavy gauge wire. And so then the question is, well, how do you weigh the Remade down? And so bricks or rocks or pieces of wood are easy to use. But a really simple idea is to, if you're using the hoop method, is from one end of the bed to the other, tie a piece of plastic string at ground level on either side of the bed. So the string runs the entire length of the bed on either side, and the plastic string doesn't stretch, but the natural string does. That's why I use the plastic string. Then you put the Remade over the bed, and then you tuck it underneath the string at ground level, and then you get clothespins and just clothespin it onto the string. So this makes it really easy to take it on or off. It keeps it from blowing off in the wind. This is a method we used at Fetzer Vineyards years ago in Hopland that Michael Maltus developed.
Who was the head gardener at that time?
Who was the garden director for the head first 8 years there.
So, and you thought that was a swell idea.
Yeah, because I've been using long, thin pieces of wood, like 10 feet long, and it's a pain to have to move that big piece of wood off of the Remade to lift up the Remade to see what's going on inside.
Great
so
tip.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Ruby calling with a question from Healdsburg this morning. Welcome to Garden Talk at KSRO. Good morning, Ruby.
And how are you people?
Great. Thank you.
But anyway, I'm in Healdsburg, and I want to plant a
Meyer lemon tree you'd like to plant in Healdsburg. And would
Pardon
you like
for
to,
coughing.
That's okay. Would you like to plant that in a pot or in the ground?
Well, I have metal plants, but I don't know how deep I should have it. Or should I have it in like a half tub or something, a wooden one?
I'd make sure the depth of the pot is at least the depth of a half wine barrel, so like 2 feet.
That's what I figured. I kind of figured I shouldn't have this because you go up about 7 steps to get to my porch, and I thought I could put something on the porch.
So
I'm sight impaired, so I can't see.
Okay, so what do you want to put it in a pot? Is that what you're asking?
That's what I was wondering. What could I put? Isn't there some kind of ground cover that would flower that I could put in these pots that I have here?
With the citrus or?
No citrus. I want to do this Meyer's lemon separately.
Oh, okay. So the Meyer's lemon.
I can buy it at Garrett's.
Okay. So you plant your citrus in one pot, and then you have another pot that you want to put some plants in. That'll
these metal plant pots.
The metal.
That I have kept organic matter, and I keep it, and then I can throw it in there, so it would have organic matter in there. But I guess I have to buy some soil.
Yes, I would get a good bag of planting mix or potting soil, and that's what you're going to plant your citrus in. And then all those other metal pots that you've been saving your organic matter in, you could also add that to the planting mix and mix it all up, and you'll have some really wonderful soil for your citrus to grow in.
So if she wants a Meyer lemon, she really needs to have a half barrel size.
At least,
Best. So that might be a little bit too big if she doesn't want to mess with something that size.
Well, then you could buy a 1 gallon citrus lemon and go with a little bit smaller pot, and then in a few years' time, then you can think about repotting it or getting somebody to repot it for you into a bigger pot.
Okay, we're going to need to take a break at that point. Thanks for your call. It's the bottom of the hour. We'll be back with more questions, more answers, live garden talk at KSRO.
FM News Talk Radio, North County 103.5, South County 94.5, KSRO.
Hey, it's time to plant bare root fruit trees, and everyone knows nothing is healthier and tastes better than hand-picked fresh fruit off your own tree. Come into Urban Tree Farm Nursery and choose from a great selection of the best-tasting varieties of apples, cherries, peaches, plums, pluots, pears, and much more. See our homepage for the latest availability. Do you need help in laying out your backyard orchard? Visit UrbanTreeFarmNursery.com and check out our fruit tree help link to help you grow your own backyard orchard. You can also see the latest videos on how to plant, prune, and maintain your own fruit trees. Are you looking for products to protect your trees or shrubs from the cold? Urban Tree Farm has a selection of frost cloths and sprays to protect your plants from freezing. Although the best time to plant a tree was 10 years ago, the next best time is now. Urban Tree Farm Nursery. We're not just trees anymore. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook for all of the latest releases, info, and deals. Fun and cheese just go together. It's 3 days of cheese bliss at the 12th Annual California Artisan Cheese Festival at the Sonoma County Fairgrounds in Santa Rosa, March 23rd through the 25th. On Friday, join 20 chefs and 20 rock star cheesemongers as they duel to see who will make the best bite. Learn from the experts at the Saturday seminars and pairing demos. Backed by popular demand on Saturday night, it's cheese and cocktails. The perfect opportunity for you to choose your favorite cheese and spirit pairing. Start your Sunday with a multi-course bubbles brunch, then stroll through the artisan cheese tasting and marketplace where you can meet more than 25 cheese makers. Buy and taste all things that go great with cheese, like wine, beer, ciders, jams, jellies, crackers, chocolate, and so much more from over 100 artisan producers. It's Cheese, Cheese, and More Cheese, March 23rd through 25th at our new location, the Sonoma County Fairgrounds in Santa Rosa. Tickets will sell out, so get yours now at artisancheesefestival.com. That's artisancheesefestival.com.
The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, where it's fun to shop healthy. Your food is fresh and provided by local farmers and ranchers. These farmers offer the freshest local produce and select beef, pork, lamb, chicken, seafood, and freshly made sausage. A variety of cheeses, eggs, and dairy, all at the market. In March, the farmers bring fresh salad mix. Parsons Homegrown is back with delicious organic heirloom tomatoes. Enjoy the Beet Generation's fresh produce and handmade pasta. Shop our creative local artisans and sample warm, fresh pastries and bread. Select one of Dominique's beautiful cherry pies. Enjoy breakfast or lunch from a variety of prepared foods. The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, winner of Bohemian's Best of Award, is open year-round, Wednesdays and Saturdays, 8:30 to 1 p.m. at Luther Burbank Center. Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, where it's always fresh, local, and fun.
Taking the first step in the process to ban bump stocks. The Department of Justice announcing a move to classify devices as a machine gun banned under federal law. Gun policy analyst Robert Spitzer says this is one gun-related regulation that's actually supported by the NRA.
The ban is not one that will pose any huge hardship for those few people in the country who have them or want to have them.
Two deadly California standoffs, one happening at this hour in Pomona. Two cops shot, one dead. The suspect, after a car chase, running into an apartment complex where he's been holed up since yesterday. And the other three people shot and killed, the gunman taking his own life at a veteran's home in Yountsville. Police say the suspect was treated there for PTSD. President Trump heading to a rally this evening in western Pennsylvania. And tonight, most of us, spring ahead. Daylight saving time about to begin, so make sure you set your clock ahead before bed. Dave Packer, ABC News.
Sonoma County's most accurate, dependable forecast with KSRO's Daniel Trucios.
May see showers today. Today, cloudy at 64 degrees, 56 on the coast. Few clouds tonight, low 44, 47 on the shores. Mostly cloudy, but dry for tomorrow at 70 degrees, 64 in Bodega Bay. Monday, some showers at 65, 60 on the coastline. Depend on weather every 30 minutes on FM News Talk 103.5 and 94.5. KSRO.
Now booking sleepovers at Graton Resort and Casino. Go all in when you spend the night with us. Book your destinations all in today at GraytonResortCasino.com.
It's Steve Garner along with special guest Kate Fry, who writes for the Press Democrat, has an award-winning book about bee gardening, and also has her own company that teaches gardening throughout Northern California. And when is the first class you're going to be teaching? What's it going to be on, Kate?
Well, we've had one already at the Shed in Healdsburg on soils and irrigation, but we have one coming right up on March 18th at Cornerstone Sonoma called the Edible Garden. It's spring and summer vegetable gardening.
And people can go to the Cornerstone website to sign up for that?
Our class is posted there, and it'll link you to our website, the American Garden School.
Great. Savita from Santa Rosa, thanks for holding, and welcome to the show. You're on Garden Talk. Hi.
Yes, good morning, everybody.
Morning.
Morning.
So my first question is for everybody, whether you have had any success in growing bugmansias.
I gave up growing them because where I live, it gets too cold, and no matter what I do, the plants freeze, and so I don't grow them. But I know lots of people that are very successful in growing them. They have like a nice little microclimate that they put their plants. Yeah, they don't even plant them in the ground. They put them in pots, and they definitely wrap them up with frost cloth, even though they do die back a lot of times in the winter, depending on how cold the winter gets. But you leave all the dead stuff there. You have to look at this, you know, ugly looking plant for a while until the spring comes and it starts leafing out. And then you can see where it's dead and where it's alive. And then you'll know where to cut all the dead stuff off.
What about you, Kate? Yay or nay?
I absolutely love them, and it's one plant that I would love to grow, but up in Hopland, it's too hot in the summer. They get spider mites, and I think they really like a more coastal climate. They like, and so I think I would try them if you've got if you're a little closer to the coast and you've got some fog and hopefully fog in the summer and hopefully a little bit cooler condition or warmer conditions for the winter, mm-hmm. Where you really see beautiful specimens uh-huh. is like Berkeley, San Francisco, and they're virtual trees there.
Okay, looks like Savita's cell phone gave up the ghost, so maybe she can call us back and we can continue our conversation. But neither of you recommend Brugmansia for our area here inland in Hopland and Santa Rosa, but more coastal areas in Berkeley, that area?
Yeah, I think, again, as Gwen mentioned, that if you have a microclimate,
a banana belt
to me, they're worth trying and making an attempt, well worth making an attempt, and then you... But they may not make it.
And even if you do try to protect it, if the temperature is getting down into the mid-20s, you bring it indoors or something, because even the root system will freeze, and then that's that.
From Petaluma, Evelyn, welcome to Garden Talk live at KSRO. Hi, Evelyn.
Good morning.
Evelyn's gone too. Boy, oh
no,
boy.
No, I heard her. She said good morning.
Oh, she did? Well, she's going to have to call back because I heard the busy signal, and I'm not sure what happened with Evelyn.
Evelyn, call back.
Call back, Evelyn, and also Savita at 636-1350. Call us back, too. Are you getting many calls or when you go out for landscape consults about fire damage and what to replant and how to assess trees? I know you've written about it. I know you've written about it, Gwen. As of here, March 2018, what are you saying?
Yeah, I'm getting a fair amount of calls for people whose houses have either... were sadly lost in the fire, and now they're planning on rebuilding, and they're looking at what they want their landscape to look like. They're wanting help assessing what is left, basically. Other people's houses were saved by the firefighters, and they want to have a beautiful garden to make people happy in their front yard, and so they're reassessing their landscapes for that reason.
And for trees, people were anxious to cut down trees of weeks after the fire, and most of the predominant counsel was wait until spring. You don't really know where that cambium layer is alive. It's hard to really assess right now in November, December, January.
Yeah.
And unless you call out a certified arborist who has experience that has been working with fire damaged trees, they can do the necessary tests that you can do on the trunks of the trees and whatnot. And also, it depends on where the tree was. If, you know, the house was unfortunately burned down, or maybe it was too close to a building or a automobile or something where the fire was next to a tree for, you know, long amount of minutes or hours or whatnot, compared to a tree in a naturalized setting in the wildlife area where the fire just went through within a few minutes, mm-hmm. you know, chances are the tree's okay. So it depends on where that tree is. But the thing is, though, I was just looking at someone's trees the other day, and they had some certified arborists come out. I was helping with the landscape, and they were told that, here's a good thing to think about. If you have a tree that's been burned and you don't know how badly damaged it is it going, if it was to fall, would it fall on anything? So then you're looking at a hazardous tree. And then you would definitely want to have a certified arborist come out and tell you whether you do need to take that tree down or not.
Otherwise, anything else to add, Kate?
Yeah, well, I think now is a really interesting time to, as you walk or drive through our area in the burned areas, and in some of them you'll notice that some of the trees still have the leaves, but they're brown and scorched. And mm-hmm. in other places, the leaves, the twigs, and small branches are burned completely off. And so that's indicating the intensity or the heat and also the duration of the fire. And so, of course, if the cambium layer is killed on the trees, then, or even on one side, this is going to severely affect the ability of the tree to grow. But obviously, the trees that have their leaves still were just really lightly scorched by the fire, and you see some of those resprouting already. You see a lot of oaks resprouting, and with the trees that were more severely burned, I think it will remain to be seen as time goes on whether they resprout. I think our native oaks have a strong ability to resprout both from the trunk or the base, depending on the damage to the cambium layer. But this can take up to 3 to 5 years. Mm-hmm. But I think that we should be seeing some resprouting now through spring on a lot of things. I've noticed there's young oaks are already resprouting, and some of our native shrubs like toyon and coyote brush and coffee berry are already sprouting for the base. So there is a lot of signs of life returning.
That's a very hopeful answer. Savita is back. So, Savita, the Brugmansia question was answered. Do you have another question for us?
Well, yes. A couple things I was just thinking about is I'm really curious to find out what happens next spring when the bulbs start coming up, because I'm thinking that if people plant their bulbs deep enough, their fall-planted bulbs, that perhaps a lot of them survive the fires very well. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I've seen a lot of bulbs coming up in these burned neighborhoods, and they look so hopeful amongst all the blackened sort of remains of trees. So I think indeed you're right. There are quite a few bulbs that are coming up, and iris, canna lilies are coming up, day lilies are. Native ferns are emerging.
And did you have another question for us, Savita?
Yes, just wanted to add another tip on to Kate's comments about her Spanish bluebells. What's really wonderful about them also is that these are the highest authorities, and the highest authorities are really, really old. So there's not only that wonderful blue-colored one she was talking about, but there is a beautiful pink one also. These are called the Hispanicas, which is mm-hmm. different than the English bluebells. Mm-hmm. The English bluebells all over England, they're just a little weaker in our climate. But, the Spanish bluebells, they do great. I so agree.
Well, there we have another vote.
Yeah.
They're coming
we'll
in.
We'll see them everywhere. We'll have bluebell woods everywhere.
Thanks for your call, Savita. Yeah. Good hearing from you.
Yeah.
Take care.
Bye.
And
bye.
Evelyn is back from Petaluma. Sorry we lost your call the first time. Evelyn, welcome to Garden Talk at KSRO. Hi.
Hi. Good morning.
Morning.
I would love to have a Daphne in my yard, but I don't know how to care for it, how to plant it, or anything about it.
Well, Daphne likes a little bit of afternoon shade or a filtered sunlight. They need really good draining soil. You have to give the bead conscientious of watering. So they don't like the soil to be too wet. They don't want it to be too dry. So I would recommend planting it in a container. That way you can really control how much water it gets. You can move it around if it's getting too much sun or not enough sun. And they're starting to come out in nurseries now, available in nurseries. The thing is, you have to be careful in transplanting too. If you get a 5-gallon size plant, get someone to help you, 2 or 3 people to help you, and, you know, cut the sides of the pot away and don't disturb the root system. Be very careful and gentle about transplanting that, because the older the plants are, the harder they are to transplant. So a 1-gallon, a nice full 1-gallon size plant is a good size to buy, even a 2-gallon size. And I would get a good planting mix and plant it correctly, water it, use a moisture meter if you have to, keep the soil like a wrung out sponge. It loves filtered sunlight all day long through, you know, the canopy of a tree. And if you can put it someplace close to your doorway or somewhere where you can smell the fragrance, instead of putting it out in the back 40 someplace where you miss out on that, even though it does perfume the air, I think if you have it close to your house or even when you get someplace near your car where you get in and out of the car, would be a nice place for it. Okay? Does that help you?
Thank you very much.
Yeah, they're a nice plant, but they're a little particular. So, especially
that's
with watering. Yeah.
But worth it.
A moisture meter will come in handy.
Thanks. Do you have any Daphne planted, Kate?
Oh, I love Daphne. It's a really good choice to put a Daphne, have everyone have a Daphne in their life because the smell is so wonderful. And I put mine in the ground and really I find them very low maintenance. I just, I have a drip irrigation system and I just mulch every year with some good compost and they're as happy as can be. And you could often get them in 2-gallon size. So I would recommend a little bit, something a little larger than 1 gallon because they're really slow.
Yeah.
And you want to have the flowers sooner rather than later.
And you have filtered light? Is that under filtered light?
It's an east-facing side of the house.
Yeah, there's nothing better in January when everything else is so gloomy to come out and all of a sudden this perfume just knocks you over.
Even now.
Yeah, yeah. If you have room for a big shrub, like something that's 6 to 7 feet high and wide, I gave up on growing the Daphnes, and I have in the ground Viburnum burkwoodii. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if there's a common name to that, but Viburnum burkwoodii has bigger flower clusters than Daphne, has a little bit different fragrance, but it's all the way in the back of my property, and I'd say 50 feet away, I can walk around and I can smell it. I have about 5 plants too.
Oh,
so
wonderful.
That helps. But that's another very fragrant early spring bloomer.
Via email from Michael Hilber, he's got a young Fuji tree planted in 2003, has branches dying, dead bark peeling off. Doesn't see any bugs under the bark. It's quite a lengthy email. Some of the tree, he says, half of it looks good. Some of it don't. He has loamy soil, not adobe. He does fertilize with triple 16, a little bit of horse manure. Soil is muddy now. He planted in an elevated area, so it's not in any standing water. So he's wondering, too little, too much water. He's wondering what to do. He also applied a little soapy spray with a nozzle to get rid of some critters, some aphids. And he did send a photo, so both of you had a chance to look at the photo.
Yeah, that's always interesting, trying to discern what plant's issue is. And so I think both Gwen and I think that with the photo that he sent, is looks like the plant got severely sunburned when it was younger and hasn't had a chance to heal. I think what people don't realize is that young trees and fruit trees are really susceptible to sunburn, especially on the west side. And this tendency is exacerbated by not having enough water. So watering is really a science, I would say. And I think that when people are hand watering, often they just give a quick squirt with a hose and think that that's sufficient. But really, that oftentimes the water is only half an inch deep or so, or the moisture in the soil. So you really want to look after you plant, when you're watering, you want to poke your finger in the soil afterwards and see if you're hand watering, if it's wet enough, or you get an old screwdriver, or even if you're drip irrigating. How deep is the water going? And so I see this all the time that that people think they're watering enough and have not been. And so it looked like that this apple tree from the photo was suffering from sunburn. And the author of the email describes watering it once a week, which should be perfectly sufficient, but it just may not have been long enough in terms of how much water it was getting.
And what he could do in the spring, what I do with my fruit trees, is I make a big moat around them. I just get my hoe and just about, 2 feet radius from the trunks, I make, a big ditch all the way around the tree, and I get my hose because I don't have any, I'm not going to hand water them because I'll do exactly what Kate says. I'll sprinkle the water and think, you've been there for hours and watering and it's only been 2 minutes. So I fill up that trench with the garden hose, fill it up. I go about 4 inches deep and about 4 inches wide, and I have mulch, compost all on top of the soil, and I'll fill that up, and then I'll come back about an hour later and see that the water's soaked into the soil, and I'll fill it up again. And I really, I do that quite a few times because you figure the size of the tree and a gallon of water, you pour that into the soil, if you can kind of visualize how little soil area that covers. So the trees, the bigger they are, they're going to need a little bit more water. So I like my moat idea. It works well.
So he's only showing us one area of this tree. It's hard to prognosticate the overall longevity and chances of this tree surviving by this, but this branch doesn't look very good.
Yeah. Well, the author also describes that he puts horse manure on the tree and
triple 16
every year. So I would actually, Gwen and I both thought that he could dispense with the triple 16 and just, I would say, go heavy on the horse manure and give it just a really good mulch, and that'll really help the moisture holding capacity of the soil and help to retain soil moisture and give the tree some needed nutrients. So obviously the soil is really wet right now and will be for some time, but as it begins to dry in the spring, I would make sure the tree is really well watered, whether you're putting in a drip system or making a moat around it. You probably want to cut off, discern what is actually dead, and maybe remove that, those branches, and then let the rest of the tree hopefully thrive.
Okay, Michael, there's your answer on your Fuji apple tree. We'll take a break. Be right back. 636-1350. Still could take a few more calls, maybe two or three before the hour is up. A great chance to talk to Kate Fry, who unfortunately we don't have on frequently enough. She lives in Mendocino County, but it's great to have her here and talk about her American Garden School and the classes that you can take coming up for the remainder of the year. And also, of course, read her in the Press Democrat, along with other Press Democrat columnist Gwen Kilcher. Both of them available, 636-1350, or you can shoot us an email at steve@ksro.com.
Sonoma County's local news, weather, and traffic station, FM News Talk, KSRO, 103.5, 94.5.
The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, where it's fun to shop healthy. Your food is fresh and provided by local farmers and ranchers. These farmers offer the freshest local produce and select beef, pork, lamb, chicken, seafood, and freshly made sausage, a variety of cheeses, eggs, and dairy, all at the market. In March, the farmers bring fresh salad mix. Parsons Homegrown is back with delicious organic heirloom tomatoes. Enjoy the Beet Generation's fresh produce and handmade pasta. Shop our creative local artisans and sample warm, fresh pastries and bread. Select one of Dominique's beautiful cherry pies. Enjoy breakfast or lunch from our variety of prepared foods. The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, winner of Bohemian's Best of Award, is open year-round, Wednesdays and Saturdays, 8:30 to 1 p.m. at Luther Burbank Center. The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, where it's always fresh, local, and fun.
The engaging 2017-18 season continues within Weill Hall at Sonoma State University's Green Music Center. On Friday, March 16th, the Yamato Drummers convey the spirit of Japan with their passionate performance. Saturday, the 17th, violinist Jennifer Koh joins pianist Shai Wassner for the third program of their acclaimed Bridge to Beethoven series. Then Saturday, April 14th, Grammy-winning jazz singer Diane Reeves and friends perform a stunning blend of jazz and R&B in a Weill Hall debut not to be missed. For Sonoma State University's Green Music Center, tickets and more info, visit gmc.sonoma.edu.
Thousands of years ago, human civilization depended on the quest for fire. Since 1960, that quest leads to just one place, Malm Fireplace Center. For indoor or outdoor fireplaces, Malm Fireplace Center has tamed the flame, offering high-quality, beautiful, efficient fires that won't burn your bank account. Satisfy your burning desires at Malm Fireplace Center, 368 Yolanda Avenue in Santa Rosa, or online at malmfireplacecenter.com.
The March of Dimes and HCA Healthcare are committed to the best possible start for every baby. I'm Amy Casseri, Vice President of HCA Women and Children's Services, where we have the honor of delivering over 200,000 babies a year. We partner with the March of Dimes on research and fundraising to help build a brighter future for babies everywhere. So march with us on one of the many HCA teams assembled nationwide. Learn more at marchforbabies.org/HCA.
Good morning, Dusty. Welcome to Garden Talk Live at KSRO. What can we do for you? Hi.
Hey, good morning. I know we got to be quick. Thank you all. I'm one of your biggest fans. And I don't think aloe vera ever flowers. I know you have the wonderful flower lady on. But so I have it's actually grown, the aloe vera plant, which has turned into three aloe vera plants, in a 4-inch pot indoors. And I've never successfully either grown a cutting or transplanted any of my indoor aloe veras successfully. I think I said successfully. Let me emphasize that. And I'm wondering, what are your best tips? And I've used succulent transplant mix or whatever you call it. I'm trying to be really quick because I know the show's almost over.
So tips for aloe vera success for transplanting?
I'm afraid of separating them, and I've never done this successfully before.
Kate, we already have. And Gwen?
I'm not good at transplanting aloe veras. I think they would be just as difficult as bromeliads. You'd have to wait for the babies to get pretty big and then, carefully take them apart from the parent and then use that cactus mix, succulent mix, and watering is going to be a big issue, and sunlight, not too much direct sunlight, not a lot of water, and keep your fingers crossed. Did you have anything?
I think that overwatering is probably a big issue for them. So I would just, when you transplant them, I would water them in then, but not overly so, and then just let them be on the dry side. Until they really get rooted.
Does it matter, recently, within the last month, twice, bless the person who did this, but the thing got knocked over, the pot got knocked over, and especially the biggest plant, but the other two babies are really quite big. It lost a number of the leaves, or whatever you call them, on aloe vera. Should I, wait extra long or something? It's been at least a few weeks, if not a month, since this happened.
I'd wait because it sounds like it lost a lot of the root system. And so give it time to regenerate new roots. And, be patient now.
Just thanks for your call, Dusty. We have about a minute. We can see whether we could answer Jill's question. She's calling from Two Rock down in Petaluma. Jill, do you have a quick question for us?
Quick question. Recommendation for a climbing rose on a trellis. Full sun. My favorite rose in the whole world is Chicago Peace. But anything. That it would be beautiful climbing.
My favorite is Altissimo. It's a single red blooming rose.
Okay.
And Kate, what about you?
I love Altissimo. Another just a good red, more double one is Don Juan.
Mm-hmm.
Would Don Juan do okay in a lot of fog?
Yeah. that I don't I don't know. I think there's one called Sally Holmes. I think has a I think there's a climbing version of that, and I think that does well in the fog.
If you want pinky kind of flowers, Zephyrine Druhan would probably work, and Jeannie LaJoy.
Tell me again.
Zephyrine, Z-E, Zephyrine Druhan, and Jeannie LaJoy.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thanks,
okay.
Jill. Enjoy the foggy Two Rock area. We love it out in Two Rock. And Kate, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank
information,
you for
your website so people can go and follow you around.
Yes, it's the American Garden School. .com, and we've got classes posted there. We have a couple coming up that are not yet on the website. Well, one that's coming up that will be of interest to people is creating a fire-safe landscape. So we'll talk about both new and existing landscapes and urban and suburban and rural areas, and there'll be a lot of information, and I'm really excited about giving this class.
Well, thanks for joining us, and I encourage people to read you and the PD. Gwen, we'll see you next week.
Yes.
All
thank
right.
you, Kate.
Coming up next, Chef John Ash on the KS Arnold Good Food Hour, and special guest Jonathan Kaufman, author of the new book, Hippie Food.
North Bay play-by-play home of the Golden State Warriors and Oakland Raiders. FM News.